Ed Sanders was a founding member of the legendary band The Fugs, the self-proclaimed freakiest singing group in the history of Western civilization. We're listening to them now. That fact alone cements his reputation as counterculture kingpin, but there's so much more to his story. He was also trained in the classics, was an early advocate for ending U.S. involvement in Vietnam and for the legalization of marijuana, and he is the author of the first book on the Manson family. He even tried to levitate the Pentagon. His new book, Fug You, An Informal History of the Peace Eye Bookstore, the FU Press, the Fugs, the Counterculture on the Lower East Side, is published by DeCapo Press, and it brings him to our studio now. Welcome back.
Well, glad to be here.
It's been a long time. Last time you were here, many years ago, it was to talk about your book on Charles Manson. I think it had been reissued.
Right.
Does he remain one of your interests, or have you moved on?
Well, I hope to do a final update. There's more and more material. A lot of the police officers have retired, and they all retire with their, quote, blue books, unquote, on various crimes. So I've gotten a lot of additional information from these retired homicide geezers in retirement.
And Manson fascinated you because he represented the counterculture gone bad?
I had just brought to an end to the 60s version of the Fugs, and I needed something to do. And I was out in California right after the murder of Sharon Tate and Jay Sebring and the others had occurred. And there was wild gossip from Hollywood sources as to the real story. And then 3 months later, this nomadic desert commune roaming around in machine gun outfitted dune buggies in Death Valley was arrested, and it didn't make sense.
And hanging out with some of the Beach Boys.
And yeah, you know, and Manson had written a song for one of the Beach Boys albums. And,
Dennis Wilson took credit for, by the way. Cease to Resist, I remember it well.
Manson's version was Cease to Exist, and Wilson changed it to Cease to Resist.
Which sounds more Manson-y.
Well, it made it more groupie-esque.
So you grew up in Kansas City.
Yes.
Did you always know you wanted to come to New York?
Well, when I became a teenager and I was influenced by reading about the Beat Generation, so you either went to California or you went to New York City. And I applied to UC Berkeley, and I applied to NYU, and NYU answered first, so I came to New York.
But you came here to study, to be a regular college student.
Yeah.
How long were you here before you fell in with Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg and William Burroughs and Gregory Corso?
Well, I had to just be a regular bozo around Greenwich Village, you know, clutching my Greek textbooks and attending Beat Generation readings on McDougal Street. I never thought I'd ever meet Allen Ginsberg or Jack Kerouac or Gregory Corso or William Burroughs, but later they became, three of them anyway, my fairly good friends, and Allen, my close friend.
So you were studying Egyptology at NYU and balancing that with an interest or palling around with some of the leading figures of the Beat Generation?
Yes. I studied Egyptology at the New School, and I studied classics at NYU. I have a degree in Greek and Latin from NYU, class of 64. Reached out to Allen Ginsberg and others through a mimeograph publication I started putting out, and they all sent me texts to publish Corso, you know.
Is that why you didn't pursue the logical career path and become a classics professor?
Well, I was going to study Indo-European linguistics, and I was tardy the summer after I graduated in applying for grad school at NYU. And so they informed me that I would have to wait. So in the waiting period, I and Thule Kupferberg founded this folk rock group called the Fugs, and there went Indo-European linguistics.
Now, how did you come to know Thule, who was an incredible character?
I knew him as a beat hero. His poetry was published in the Village Voice. He was in the anthologies, you know, with a photograph by Fred McDara. And so he was a hero. But he used to stand outside of Greenwich Village Theater selling his underground publications. So I met him outside the Charles Theater on Avenue B in 1962. And he gave me poetry to publish in my magazine. And then 2.5 years later, late 64, we were in a bar on St. Mark's, and we were influenced by the Beatles. And
so you could be Lennon, McCartney?
Well, we could be Marx and Engels. Or, you know, we one of the early names. I wanted to call us the Yodeling Socialists, and Dooley came up with the word the Fugs, the phrase the Fugs, borrowed from Norman Mailer's novel. So that stuck. And it was very controversial. I doubt if you could utter the word the Fugs on a lot of radio stations back then.
Well, Norman Mailer came up with that word for the Naked of the Dead because he couldn't use the word he wanted to use that soldiers use all the time. So this got past the censors.
Right.
But how did you divvy up responsibilities? Did one of you write melodies and the other one lyrics? Because both of you were poets.
Well, Thule, I always called his musical roots anarcho-Hasidic. He was an early anarchist at Brooklyn College in the, I think, the late 40s and early 50s. And I came from a more social democratic background. And we were all inspired by the civil rights movement and all those three chord songs. Everybody had guitars in their apartments. Everybody sang all the time. So I came from Kansas City, was exposed to a lot of jazz when I was a kid. And then, of course, rock and roll shows coming to the Kansas City Municipal Auditorium, you know. And so it was anarcho-Hasidic meets country and western and civil rights and rock and roll, and the fusion gave birth to the Fugs.
Did you feel complimented when the popular hangout was Max's Kansas City, of
yes,
all places in New York?
Well, that was the poet Joel Oppenheimer came up with that. I don't know. Yeah, I used to hang out there.
Kerouac wasn't in New York a lot in the by the early 60s, so did you know him much at all?
Well, he used to walk by my bookstore on East 10th on his way to visit Allen Ginsberg, who lived just down the road. And he would call me up. I put up, dictate poems to me. I put one of the poems he dictated to me in Fug You. And then the closest I came to him was when he and I were both in September of 1968 on the William Buckley Show.
Yeah, how did that come about?
I don't know. I got a call from the producer of the Buckley Show and invited me on. And so it was a memorable event, you know.
He had become something of a reactionary at that time, reclusive, anti-Semitic. And then he was completely drunk on the show.
He was a little drunk. He fell off the riser. You know, we were on these cubicles, and he fell off one of the cubicles after the first segment, and Buckley threw up his hands and said, "All right, that's it." And Allen Ginsberg was in the audience, and he wanted to substitute Allen for Kerouac, and we all said, no, he'll be all right. So Kerouac was a little bit wasted. He had been drinking at the Delmonico Hotel in William Burroughs' room before the show, and he was, you know, smoking a plastic-tipped little cigar and a little bit out of it, but, you know, made some cogent points.
Made some cogent points about what?
Well, he was fiercely for Richard Nixon for the fall election. You know, that was the dichotomy in the Beats. Allen Ginsberg voted for John Kennedy in 1960. Jack Kerouac voted in 1960 for Richard Nixon. So it was that right-left beat split that...
I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah.
Ed Sanders is here. He's written a memoir of the 60s and 70s called Fug You, F-U-G. It's published by DeCapo Press. The Beats have been more or less accepted as a part of the American literary tradition. But where do people like you rank them? Do you see them as the equals of Fitzgerald or O'Connor or Hemingway, Faulkner, Bellow, Roth, whatever?
You're mentioning novelists, so that
Kerouac. Okay.
That's Kerouac.
Okay, Wallace Stevens, yeah. William Carlos Williams.
I think of the two, Allen Ginsberg was a greater writer. I would rank them Ginsberg, Burroughs, Kerouac, Corso, in descending order of brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ginsberg was a truly monumental mind and a great mind and a wonderful poet. I think Kerouac was beset by his demons a little too much. But
didn't they all have demons? I mean, we have a lot of bad behavior here, some of it even criminal. We have William Burroughs shooting his wife. Ginsberg had a penchant for young boys. And we could go on down the line with these guys.
Yeah, it reminds you of 19th century French poets. Nobody's perfect. And what remains in black and white on paper is what's important. And I think Kerouac left a 10 novel history of his own struggle. Ginsberg left about, surprisingly, only about 800 pages. I would have thought with all his daily journal taking, I mean, he left 800 pages. Burroughs left a couple of really good novels. You're born, you flame, then you die.
Well, it's interesting that some of the influence extends far beyond the United States border. I just recently spoke to some young Russian writers, and hitchhiking is a major part of the youth culture, and one of the verbs is to Kerouac. And On the Road is one of the key books in this young generation's.
That's true. Canon. It's a wonderful book. Ginsberg was the one that took the message. He traveled extensively and had a fantastic energy level, so he could interrelate with many poets in Italy, in France, in Germany, in India, in Japan. He went to China and stirred up poetry sessions over there. So he was the ambassador of the Beats. And if it wasn't for Allen Ginsberg, I doubt if there would have been a Beat generation. So Allen was the apostle. Kerouac was the surly potentate whom Allen loved.
Norman Mailer wrote an essay in which he distinguished between the Beats and the hippies.
Mm-hmm.
Did that fly with you? There's a very blurry line between the two groups, isn't there?
Well, there was a time. I used to go on integrated peace walks in the South in the early 60s, and the sheriff's deputies down there would call us dirty beatniks. And then after the be-in in 1967, instead of being a dirty beatnik, you were suddenly a dirty hippie. And you had to throw away your bongo drums and your black berets and your turtleneck sweaters and your corduroy shirts and replace them with Tom Jones finery. And we thought for a few years that people would wear primary colors for the rest of the century and beyond. We were wrong, of course, but there was a shift, that's what I'm saying, between Beats and hippies. Then it happened to right around the early 67.
But Mailer said the Beats were kind of the last gasp of the old bohemian literary tradition, and hippies represented some kind of an African-American influence on younger white people. I don't know if any of that's true. But then we also move on to punks, and they all seem to – one thing just seems to lead to the other. In the end, do they all just represent a certain kind of a anti-establishment attitude?
There is that. Saying no to the Uber culture is a very powerful drive and spark for a lot of young people.
And some of the things that you did, there was a lot of humor, spectacle, especially with the Fugs. But looking back, some of the activities you were involved with come across as a bit sophomoric or naive. Do you feel that way now, or do you just see it as an expression of the times?
Well, we gave it our all. You know, I grew up in the Midwest, and I was taught by my parents to really give it all, give it everything you had. And so I sprang out of the Midwest, like Hemingway, like T.S. Eliot, like a lot of people, like a Hart Crane, and beat on my chest. And some things I did I would not do now, but, you know, they say the youth is wasted on the young. I mean, if you're not going to have fun and thrills and mix fun with revolution when you're young, when are you going to do it?
Do you find that young people are aware of what the Fugs did, listening to their music?
Well, I get a lot of emails, and everywhere I travel a lot, and I come back from the road with a lot of CDs and performance tapes from youth. I get letters. I thought I could have a nice old age and no one would know anything about the Fugs or my wild youth, but...
It was an interesting time. I mean, we didn't get into Andy Warhol and a whole bunch of other subcultures that were all taking place in New York at the time. You have a feeling that is all dead here. Ed Sanders, his new book, Fug You, from DiCapo Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Lenny. Thank you very much. Dope sex revolution, pretty paisley use.